Well, good evening and a very warm welcome one and all to Dr. Rock's radio show here on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. That was the John Langan Band and Pumpkin Pie, a little bit too late for Halloween. And before that, of course, Motorhead. I'm afraid that with that hard rock, apparently I completely disturbed the structure of the waters in your body, the subject of this evening's show. From about 10 o'clock, if all goes according to plan, I'll be joined by Julie Rocker all the way from Australia via the Skype. Hopefully it doesn't degrade with distance. I saw Julie giving a fantastic talk about water, the state of it, how important it is, and various means by which we can improve the water we drink earlier on in the year. And I've been trying to get her on the show since. Since she can't join us till about 10 o'clock or so, I thought I'd be looking for some interesting material on water, because somewhere on the Dr. Rock page there's already a podcast about hydration and all of the kind of more straightforward and medical points as to why it is that we need to be drinking more water. But last week we heard Sunbird from the Tribal Love Cooperative or Tribal Love Society talking to us about some of his loves, talking about how his life's basically been determined by the intent that he sets, and he believes that that really is all important. And also about his interest in water, and he was telling us that he'd felt moved at some point many years ago to start collecting water from around the world and adding it together and generally trying to maintain an information stream. There's obviously no need to keep the whole collections of water together, because it seems that water has memory and will always remember whatever it is that's happened to it. So by keeping the inside of his bottle wet, as it were, he's collected, I think it was thousands of different sorts of water, which he uses to make the perfect cup of tea. So in the hour before we bring Julie onto the show, I'm going to play some selected excerpts from a movie that synchronistically came my way recently. I saw a trailer for it something like a couple of months ago and finally managed to get hold of the whole movie. And it's called Water, the Great Mystery. And it deals with some of the weirder and less known aspects of water, like the fact that apparently until recently a science, as it's called, didn't know really anything about water. Now it knows quite a lot, and quite a lot of it is extremely strange. So the first couple of excerpts that I'm going to play last about 25, 28 minutes between them, then have a quick tune probably. And then there's three or four very short excerpts that I've selected as well. I'll post the link into the chat box, and obviously I'll be able to keep an eye on what's going on in there whilst this is playing. But this is from Intention Media, Water, the Great Mystery. Some truly amazing stuff, I think. Really great to find it gathered into one place. And we get to find that there's actually quite a lot of people out there doing experiments, a bit like Mr. Emoto. So here you go. I'll be back with you in less than half an hour.
As such, has been extensively studied. I mean, it is well known that water has unusual properties, physico-chemical properties, when compared to other liquids.
No scientist has been able to explain, for example, why water's density increases below the freezing point and becomes less above freezing. Any substance contracts when it is cooled, but water does the opposite. It expands. People learned to exploit this unique property in the distant past. Inhabitants of the far north would quarry stone by pouring water into the cliff face crevices before the frosts came. In the south, people pounded wooden wedges into cracks in the rock and then doused them with water. As they swelled, the wedges would break the stone. Much later, scientists established that water in pores and capillaries is capable of creating enormous levels of pressure. In a seed, for example, it reaches 400 atmospheres at the moment of germination. That's why a plant shoot can break through asphalt with ease.
It's such a small molecule as well. It is very specific that these properties are of water. And you won't find other molecules that have have all of the similar anomalies.
Even if a single one of these anomalies were missing, life itself would not exist on the planet.
Every one of water's properties is unique, and they do not easily fit into the generally accepted laws of physics. Science has not yet been able to answer the question of why water is the only substance on the planet that can exist in three states: liquid, solid, and gaseous. Why does water have the highest surface tension of all liquids? Why is it the most powerful solvent on Earth? And how, in defiance of the Earth's gravity, is water able to rise through the trunks of gigantic trees against tens of atmospheres of pressure?
We have taken a great step forward. We have really understood that we know almost nothing about water. Therefore, it is a great step because this realization is followed by the desire to find something out.
Southeast Asia. The year is 1956. The place is a secret military laboratory for developing and producing weapons of mass destruction. Work has been underway here for several years on a powerful new generation of bacteriological weapon. The scientists are discussing what properties this weapon should have at one of their protracted secret meetings. Suddenly, the session breaks off. All of the participants are taken to the hospital with symptoms of severe food poisoning. An investigation into what happened quickly hits a dead end. The scientists had consumed nothing except water from the carafes on their table. The water was tested. No harmful additives were found. Its chemical composition was H2O. And that's what the report said. Poisoning caused by ordinary water. Twenty years later, a fantastic hypothesis was put forward. A hypothesis that could explain water's unpredictable behavior. Water has memory. Experiments done in many countries around the world have shown that water receives and makes an imprint of any outside influence, remembering everything that occurs in the space that surrounds it. Any substance coming into contact with water leaves a trace in the water. Had our ancestors guessed this when they used silver vessels to turn ordinary water into healing water?
It is today the best antibiotic that is made as good in Afghanistan and Iraq. The American army uses this water, one atom per 100 million, to kill all the germs in a wound. So the President of the United States uses this water to keep infectious bugs from his hand. So I said, how can this water be?
As it records information, water acquires new properties, yet its chemical composition remains unchanged.
So their theory was the chemical composition of the water is important. Now the sensational news is that is nonsense. The structure of water is much more important than the chemical composition.
The structure of water means how its molecules are organized. We can see how water molecules join together into groups. These are called clusters. Scientists came up with the idea that these clusters work as memory cells of a certain sort, in which water records the whole history of its relationship with the world, as if on magnetic tape.
People don't think, when you turn on the light, the water is changing. When you turn on the electric field from the power lines, the water may change. So that is the direction of research.
The water, of course, remains water, but its structure, like a nervous system, reacts to any irritation. Modern instruments have made it possible to record the fact that within each of water's memory cells, there are 440,000 information panels,
each of which is responsible for its own type of interaction with the environment.
If you consider a cluster as a group of specific molecules, then it can survive only a short amount of time. But if you consider it as a structure whereby molecules can leave and other molecules come in, the cluster can last effectively for a very long time.
The stability of the cluster structures confirm the hypothesis that water is capable of recording and storing information.
It may be the single most malleable computer, which can, it's like a computer memory. It's the memory of information. We must know how it is arranged. It is like the alphabet. If I give you the alphabet, you don't know a word, you don't know a letter, you don't know a sentence. So the molecular structure is the alphabet of water. And you must make a sentence out of water, and you can change a sentence.
In the winter of 1881, the sailing ship Laura was on a course from Liverpool to San Francisco. On the third day of the voyage, a fire broke out on board. Among those abandoning ship was the captain, Neil Carey. The water supply soon ran out, and the crew experienced the torments of thirst growing by the hour. Later, when they reached shore safely after three terrible weeks adrift at sea, the captain, a man with a very level-headed attitude towards events, described what had saved them. "We were dreaming of fresh water," he said. "We began to imagine that the water around the lifeboat was turning from ocean blue to the greenish hue of fresh water. I summoned up my strength and scooped some up. When I tasted it, the water was fresh."
Well, take a famous event, when Jesus Christ turned water into wine. He didn't add some sugar or lactose, but he imparted an absolutely special property to the water. We have carried out many experiments on the effect that quite diverse factors have on samples of water. Magnetic fields, electrical fields, various objects, and also including a human presence and human emotions. And it became clear that positive and negative human emotions are the strongest element of influence.
Professor Korotkov's laboratory has conducted numerous experiments on the effect of human emotions on water. A group of people were asked to project onto a flask of water in front of them very positive emotions like love, tenderness, and concern. Then, the flask was replaced with another one, and the people were asked to project emotions of a different type: fear, aggression, hatred. After this, measurements were taken on the samples. The water exhibited changes that were clearly in one direction or another.
So love increases water's energy levels and stabilizes the water, while aggressive emotions reduce the energy and make radical changes in the water.
I hope to show people through my research that water has a memory of its own.
Dr. Emoto's laboratory does research on water samples, which are subjected to various forms of outside influence. The impressions made upon the water are recorded by swiftly freezing it in a cryogenic chamber. This is what water heated in a microwave oven looks like. This is the effect of a mobile telephone. Somebody said thank you to this water. Excuse me. You disgust me. With modern technology, it is possible to structurize water artificially. When seeds were grown under laboratory conditions using this kind of water,
The soy sprouts had 6 times greater photon radiation than when ordinary water was used. Using structurized water makes vegetables ripen faster and increases the amount of useful microelements and vegetable proteins severalfold.
If we look at the shoots, the treated ones were long, even, and strong, while the untreated ones were short, thin, and weak. If we look at the plants today, those from the selected seeds have all ripened, but the ones from non-selected seeds have not. We have to say that using structurized water really does affect the growth of vegetables and fruits.
For the purposes of irrigation, 20% less of this type of water is needed than when using ordinary water. No fertilizer was added to the soil or the water. The chemical composition remained the same, H2O. The only thing that had changed was its structure. At the present time, scientists can answer the question of how this happens, but science does not yet have an answer to the question of why. Depending on age, a human being is made up of 70 to 90% water. An adult drinks approximately 2.5 liters of water each day in order to sustain his normal life functions. Another 1.5 liters is absorbed through the skin during bathing or showering. Water makes a long and difficult journey before arriving in our homes.
It used to be common knowledge that a settlement could only occur where there was a natural source of water. Today, whether or not there is water in a place is of no importance, because we transport water for thousands of miles using high pressure.
In nature, rivers and streams always flow along a smoothly curving course. But any water supply system has multiple right angle turns. The natural structure of the water breaks down more and more with each such turn.
Water from a water supply system which flows into our homes through pipes has various forms, crystals of various forms, but they are all deformed. That is, it may look like this. It can look like this or have these crystals in many other arrangements, but you won't see any symmetry or beauty.
Water that flows in a floor panel heating system is devitalized and rotten. It sucks energy out of the people, plants, and animals living in that house. It actually steals the energy. It is well known that the water supply in many large cities is a closed-loop system. After undergoing aggressive chemical purification and passing through powerful filters, the water in these systems is returned to our homes, still remembering the chemicals and the violence it was subjected to. Even stronger, however, is the informational pollution that the water accumulates as it flows down miles of long pipes through thousands and thousands of houses and apartments. We pollute water spiritually, and this happens on a huge scale. Why? The water adopts all of the hatred, all of the malice, the stress. The water is almost dead by the time it enters our body.
I think that scientists should look more closely at how water interacts with their molecules. At a molecular level, it creates the structure of DNA. We wouldn't have the DNA helix without water. It creates the structure of proteins, so our bodies wouldn't work without the water.
Every seed, every embryo begins its life exclusively in water. Amniotic fluid plays a role in the embryo's development and preservation. It is the surrounding water, like a universal computer, that reveals any biological program. And thus water is also the only thing that can change it. The preacher wrote long ago, "Is there anything whereof it may be said, See, this is new? It hath been already of old time, which was before us." And Jacob took him rods of green poplar, and of the hazel and chestnut tree, and pilled white strakes in them, and made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had pilled before the flocks, in the gutters, in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, and the flocks conceived before the rods, and brought forth cattle, ring-straked, speckled, and spotted.
We subjected water to super-weak magnetic field impulses. These fields are tens of thousands of times weaker than the Earth's natural magnetic field. That means they are negligibly small from the standpoint of modern science.
Fish were introduced into water that had been treated in this way, and the fish soon produced an unusual hatch of small fry. They differed radically from other fish to which they were related, though they looked as much alike as twins.
Gray stripes appear on the belly of all these males at once, along with colored spots, which had not been observed previously. These are called phenotype changes, and it is of fundamental importance that these changes appear not just in some of the treated fish, but in all of them at the same time. And these phenotype changes that we caused are not a hypothesis. They occurred in practice.
The experiment resulted in changes not only in the outward appearance of the fish, but also in their behavior. They began to react to outside stimuli in the same way. It was as if the whole school had acquired a collective mind.
A whole important area of problems came up, which had not been studied whatsoever. Therefore, it was decided that it would suffice to establish even just the fact that behavior could change the form of animals using only water, which fact, in and of itself, is very significant. If water has such a strong effect, that is, we shouldn't make it public without thoroughly studying this.
In 1932, sensational news traveled around the world. The American physicists Harold Urey and Albert Osborne had discovered that, in addition to ordinary water, heavy water also exists in nature. Deuterium-2O. The splitting of deuterium was the basis for creation of the most destructive bomb, the hydrogen bomb. Now, everybody knows very well what radioactive radiation can cause, but it turns out that there are other, even more awesome effects. Rather more horrific is the change in the structure of water, covering huge areas, thousands of miles larger than the nuclear weapons testing grounds. It made no difference where the test was carried out, in the atmosphere, on the ground, or underground.
Colossal changes occur in the water. And the water's memory changes, and people drink that water, animals drink it, and suddenly terrible changes take place.
When the explosion occurs, waves are formed, which die out fairly quickly in the ground, but the water may continue to fluctuate for another 30 days. Swinging like a pendulum, the waves create a new and pathological ordering in the water. It has been noted that the number of suicides rises abruptly after such tests.
By a factor of 2, 2.5, 3, medical experts had absolutely no explanation for this, but we could understand it. We showed the brain is made of water, about 85%. So these changes take place in the brain, and a conflict between the water structures arises. The bioplasm of the brain is disrupted, and the result is that the person
is deprived even of such an extremely important incentive as the drive to live.
In ancient legends, the hero would always be sent to fetch dead water in a place from which there is no return. According to tradition, the only sea on earth in which there is no life came into existence where the destroyed cities Sodom and Gomorrah had been located, the Dead Sea.
There really is no such thing as dead water. Water gives life. It always has this original vitality. It may be used more correctly or less correctly, but it is always positive.
How a person handles water, if he approaches the water with good thoughts or blesses it and says thank you to it, the quality of the water will improve and the water will have a positive effect on a person and his body.
According to the Chronicles, in 1472, Abbot Carl Gustinsis was arrested on the basis of a false denunciation and interrogated in connection with having caused a certain prominent lady to fall ill. While he was being held in a dungeon, the abbot was given only a crust of stale bread every day, along with a dipper of rotten, stinking water. After 40 days, the prison warden noticed that Father Carl not only had not gone into decline, but he even seemed to have gained health and strength, which only served to convince the inquisitors that the abbot had connections with dark forces. Later, Carl Gustinsis confessed under brutal torture that he had recited a prayer over the rotten water he was given, thanking the Lord for bestowing these trials upon him. After that, the water tasted bland and turned fresh and clear.
We have two containers of emulsified crude oil, which is a byproduct of oil production, a stable combination of water and oil, which remain bound in this state for years. The test sample is irradiated. The element will treat one container for 7 days, making the water molecules lessen their contact with the oil molecules. After 4 days, we compare the test sample and the control. The water has separated from the oil. At the boundary between the water and oil phases, there are crater-like formations. This means that the separation process is continuing. The fields we use to influence the water are comparable in intensity with the electromagnetic field of the human heart. On the 7th day of treatment, the experiment is finished. The water has completely separated from the oil.
Experts estimate that oil men have accumulated around 1 billion tons of emulsified crude oil. It cannot be used for industrial purposes. Ultimately, they get rid of the emulsion, pouring it right onto the ground. And then, horrible sludge lakes are formed in the oil fields. In the language of the Pemon Indian tribe in Venezuela, Roraima is translated as the mother of all waters. A group of Russian biophysicists set out for this destination in January 2005 to collect a unique sample of water, which scientists say has never been in direct contact with human beings. Such water exists in only one place on Earth, in Venezuela. According to one hypothesis, a continent called Gondwana existed in the southern hemisphere during the Paleozoic era,
powerful tectonic processes occurring in the Earth's crust 3.5 million years ago split it into several parts. As a result of these changes, some segments of the continent sank, while those resting on granite substrates remained at their previous level. Elevated plateaus were formed, which the Indians called tepuis, meaning pillars. Roraima is the largest of them.
It's a really remote place, very hard to get to. 3 days of travel through the savanna and then the jungles. Then you climb an 800-meter wall. It takes a certain amount of enthusiasm. Therefore, we can say that the water we have there is in a unique, virgin state.
There is always a large cloud over Roraima. As evening approaches, a light haze appears. When the moon comes out from behind the mountains, the mist begins to glow with an even blue light. And in that light, it is visible how fine droplets of moisture are hanging in the still air. The slightest breath of a breeze, and this watery dust forms into drops. This is the origin of the rain, which rushes down in countless waterfalls.
So today is January 30th, 2005. Water collection number 16. Then we shall pack it all up in foil. And in this form, this water will hold its energy for several days with the air of these places. Then we'll arrive in St. Petersburg and we'll calmly carry out our laboratory analysis several thousand miles away. And only then will we be able to draw any conclusions.
Professor Korotkov's laboratory has developed an instrument that can determine the energetics of water.
Welcome back. You're listening live to Dr. Rock's radio show on msiradio.com and scotlandisfree.ning.com. And after having had a bit of an introduction to the subject of water, I've now got Julie Rocker on the line with me. Can you hear me all right, Julie?
I can, yes, I can hear you well.
Very good. Thank you very much for joining us on the show. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you for talking about water.
I think it becomes more and more apparent the more we find out about it, what a crucial subject it is, really. Where do you start when you're talking to people about water?
Well, you know, I think it's important to understand how vital it is, both individually and globally. That can't be overstated. And I like the idea that it's an easy thing to improve. You know, wherever you stand with your water, you can make an improvement. And then you're heading in the right direction. Healthy water uplifts the spirit. And, of course, life is based on water. You know, without water, there would be no life.
No, it's true. It's nearly everything, all the food, all the animals, it's nearly all water, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah. And the search for life on other planets is about looking for water. You know, we're basically great big bags of water that walked out of the ocean and found a way to bring the ocean with us. You know, blood and seawater are basically the same mineral content.
Yeah, I think even our DNA exists in a little bath of salt water that's pretty much the same as blood and the sea as well.
Yeah, and look, we're 60% water, you know, up to 90% water, some parts of us, and particularly, you know, babies. And if we can focus on our water consciousness, we're easily doing lots of things to improve ourselves and the planet. It just follows naturally.
Yeah.
Good water means better, you know, living. Polluted water. Yeah, well, polluted water is just stagnation, you know, it's sickness, disease.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
I guess we start with the raw material, don't we? Sort of, what's the best water that you've had to drink?
Oh, well, it depends for what you're drinking it for. I mean, some of the health waters and spring waters are great tonics. Fantastic if you're sick or just for a tonic, but not necessarily the best water for everyday use. Certainly, you know, some of the spring waters around are lovely. I can't really name any in particular, but
Why are they particularly good as a tonic, do you think, these are the sort of mineral waters?
Well, they can have great pranic energy, great vitality, particularly if they come from springs that have got a good underground current that's moving through good areas, good environment, and not picking up too many toxins. But also, they've got a high mineral content. So if people are lacking in minerals, you know, they can be a good boost, but not necessarily what you want to be drinking every day.
Why is that?
Well, the high mineral content can work against the taking up of hydrogen into the cells and the electricity that works between blood and cells that's about detoxifying and sending, you know, the chemical messages that get sent around the body. If the mineral content's too high, and I think it's above about 100 dissolved TDIs, total dissolved solids in the water, that breaks down a bit. So mm-hmm. it's not quite so useful for day-to-day water. It's not so available. Yeah.
Right. So so what do you recommend as the ideal day-to-day water?
Day-to-day water should be obviously clean, as clean as you can get it, as clean as it's practical to get it in however you're living, you know, and we can talk about ways of doing that later. But it should be between 50 and 100 total dissolved solids so that this mineral balance is right for the hydrogen donating into the cells. And then, you know, it should also be activated, or what we call matured, structured water, so that it can hold its charge. You know, a lot's talked about the pollution of water, the toxins in water, but we also need to think of the vibration of water, the messages that are in water, and how that might be affecting it, because it holds memory. You know, everywhere it's been and, you know, everything that it's passed through, whether it's through the, you know, filtration system at a water plant or, you know, through a toxic stream, it has memory. And a lot of the water's recycled in the world. So, you know, and that memory's not necessarily being filtered out.
Mm-hmm.
So good drinking water needs to have some attention, you know, paid to that vibrational level as well.
So we did hear a bit about structured water and stuff in the bit clips that I was playing earlier. How do you go about sort of preserve or maturing your water, as you put it? What methods does that involve?
Well, you need to think about where your water's come from and what. Where it is anyway. I mean, perhaps if you're in a situation where you can clean, you've got fairly good clean water from a stream, maybe you can filter it a little bit, and maybe it's okay, you don't need to do too much more. But most of us are drinking water that's been stored in some kind of a vessel for, you know, a long time, or it's in pipes where it's not moving. And so it becomes dead and doesn't hold its structure so well. You've probably heard about it before. So we need to move it, basically. If it's moving, it's vital. Now, how you do that is basically you can either buy a machine that does it for you. If you create a vortex in it, and there are machines around that will, you know, you put the water in and they'll vortex it for 9 minutes, 27 minutes, creating this vortex, creating this structured water. At another level, you can do it yourself. You know, you can water, you can put it in some kind of a vessel and stir it. Stir it to create a vortex. Stir it one way, you know, for a bit. Stir it the other way for a bit. And this sort of practice, this kind of focus on your water daily, you know, it's like a meditation. It's like a gift of joy as you start to kind of resonate with the water. And if you structure the water while it's over a magnet, it's said that it holds its structure a lot longer, which I believe is about 30 hours. So if it's been sitting for longer than 30 hours, you probably want to give it a swirl again.
I remember reading Victor Schauberger, certainly his name is, and he was pointing out that all rivers kind of flow in a swirling motion, and that as when water spins, it brings it back to life.
Yes, it aerates it, which, you know, just at its basic level, it introduces oxygen into it and life into it. But yes, it makes those fluid molecules of water, those where it's got a positive and negative charge on either side of the water molecule, they join up with their you know, other molecules to create this hexagonal water, this structure that's a lot more stable. And the idea has been presented to me that it's like the difference between quartz crystal, you know, and a pure crystal, where water is disorganized. It still has structure, so it's like a cloudy crystal. But then when it gets this nice hexagonal water, it's clear and it resonates and it you know, it sings its song with clarity and it's healthy stuff.
So presumably that involves storing the water for a while yourself whilst you bring it back to life.
Yeah, usually you would filter it and if you can, however you do that, and then you would store it and vitalize it. It's a process that you don't want to store too much water, too much structured water, that is, because, as I say, it loses its life again. So you need some kind of vessel which might hold 2 or 3 litres of water or more, depending on how big your family is, of course. But even, look, every you know, glass of water you've got, you can give it a bit of a stir, you know, to create this vortex either way. Swizzle your drinking water around.
Do you think it makes a difference what attitude you approach the water with?
There's no doubt about it. It makes a difference because, as I've said, it holds memory. So water that's impregnated with anger, and this is following on from the work of Emoto, you know, who has shown how water can hold consciousness. You know, it's you know, if we want our physical, emotional, and mental state to operate on the kind of purest level, it helps to put high vibration in water that is as pure as we like our mind to be.
Yeah, I think Emoto eventually came up with the conclusion that love and gratitude are the two most useful ideas with which we can approach our water.
Yeah, and by drinking water that's filled with love and gratitude and healing energies, we create this morphic resonance field that then creates love and healing in ourselves and in other people and in all the water bodies of the planet. And it's helpful. It starts things getting higher. It starts our body being alive, and then we look to more alive ideas in other things we do.
It's an interesting idea, isn't it, that that everybody else is made out of water as well, so approaching them with love and gratitude probably helps too.
Yeah, that morphic resonance. So you're sort of tuning in to the other bag of water as you're tuning into other people. And, you know, I work as a geomancer, a feng shui practitioner, and, you know, a lot of what we're doing when we're working on sites, people's homes, is tuning in to the water, you know, tuning into the health of the water dragons and the underground watercourses and the river streams. And, you know, this has a large effect on people that live near them. And it's an easy kind of level. I guess we're naturally tuned to pick up those vibrations. It's easier for us to pick up from some other things, actually.
So, I mean, in a feng shui sense, are there other things you can do about the home to make the water better?
Well, feng shui is, you know, water is a huge topic in feng shui. Water is actually used as a symbol of wealth. It was so important because I guess at a very basic level, they carried a lot of their goods on the water canals. So if you had good access to these water canals, you had, you know, access to wealth. So fish, you know, many people would know fish are considered very auspicious in feng shui because you put them in water and they activate the water. So you have active water on your property. There are many things you can do about placement of water, the way water flows under your property, around your property. Things to look out for, particularly in Europe, is where people have got closed up wells under their house. So there may have been a well and then the house gets extended. The well gets, you know, filled up with very toxic things sometimes, like car batteries and, you know, the old pram and all sorts of things, people's old wellies. And they get shoved down the well and then it gets capped and then a room gets built over the top. And you have this kind of stagnant, noxious chi resonating in part of your house.
And how do you find such things? Do you douse for them?
Well, often there'll be a history that people will know that there was a well there, or they've even been, it's even been themselves that have capped it, or they start doing building and it's uncovered, or you can douse for them. Yes, you can. Dowsing is one of the usual methods for working with underground streams and things.
And so presumably when you found one, you tidy it up by taking the physical rubbish out of it. Do you do anything else to it?
Yes, if you can put some good quality stones down it. If you need to cap it, you know, people aren't going to pull down their building, so you need to clean up the well, as you say, pull out the physical debris, and then put some clean river stones down it and recap it, so you're closing it again.
Right, and putting stones in it that themselves have been in a natural place.
Yeah, the better the quality stones you can use, you know, the better it is. And then the stream can, and you need to look, of course, at perhaps having something like an earth acupuncture treatment on it to just clean up the energy fields in the water.
And what does that involve?
Well, it's like working on the body, acupuncture on the land. So a practitioner would come and tune into the water, usually with dowsing. And there's various methods used all over the world for how these fields are cleaned up. We like to use wands made from trees that sort of have tree spirits in them. And by using in dialogue with the tree spirits and the water dragons, and you know, sometimes also offerings can be a way of working. Bark flower remedies, you know, are very useful. You can even if you've got a well that is around, you know, a little bit of bark flower remedies down the well, because of course that's basically vibrational water. So you can put a little bit of that down the well and it will start to just lift the vibration a little bit. But always you must pay attention to the physical mundane level. I mean, it's like the drinking water. You've got to get those toxins out first. It's no point chanting over water if it's not, you know, healthy, if it's not pure water to start with.
Mm-hmm.
It'll tend to will bring it up, even if it's, you know, quite stagnant and you pay it some attention, it'll bring it up, but it won't hold up. It won't hold its vibration unless it's structured well and clean.
Those bark flower remedies are amazing, aren't they? And I guess that given that water has memory, by putting some in there, once it's in there, it remembers it.
Yes, it starts to lift its game a little bit, if you like. It starts to resonate on a higher level. And then as if you can get things rolling that way, if you can get the water flowing that way so that, it starts to have more chi, have more health, have more pranic value, it will keep going. You know, it's like once you get it rolling down the hill, you come in and physically kind of remove that little bit that's damming it at an energy level. You can use rescue remedy. You can use rock water. Water is it's sort of for letting go of any structure. You know, people are too hard on themselves or living, you know, too strictly. You can use rock water. So it's kind of good for where water's stagnant or caught. Or you can use walnut, which is good for transition.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if I remember rightly, rock water is my basic remedy. I get given that one quite a lot.
Okay.
And you're working with elementals as well. I mean, I know that you spend time in the UK as well as Australia. Do you notice differences between the various spirits that you're working with?
Yeah, now that's a very interesting thing, yeah. Yeah, so I live between the UK and Australia. I've been fortunate enough to do that for the last 13 years. And in doing that, you notice a big difference between the more yang nature of Australia, and a lot of you UK listeners will know Australians, you know, we're much more direct and frank and open and, you know, to the bloody point, you know, kind of thing. Whereas the UK is, you know, it's a more yin nature. It's damper and it's more older by nature, and there's, you know, there's more little hidden ways. And the energy gets held in the landscape a lot differently. In the UK, there'll be a lot more ghosts, really. Ghosts and greeblies are more apparent. It's not that there's not haunted places in Australia. There certainly are. But in the UK, this damper environment and the colder weather will tend to hold spooky, damp ghost energy for longer. Whereas if you have a yang environment, you know, it's open and direct, it won't hold it as long.
Oh, so brilliant!
It affects the culture of the people and the, you know, the mindset of people who live in different quality waters, if you like.
Yeah, I know you're in a city at the moment, but you spend time sort of out in the outback as well, don't you? What do you do about water when you're out there?
Yeah, look, I've just come yesterday from our place on the in East Queensland, southeast Queensland, out the back, where we're reliant on our getting our own water and dealing with our own water. So we have to be very conscious of, you know, how much water's in the tank. Half the year you're worried about running out, and then the other half, when the rains come, you're worried about flooding and what it might be doing to your water. Where we live there, we have a well, an old well that's down about 20 feet into the water table on the water floodways. And it's very clean water in that it's not had to travel through any industry or any population centres, just a few cow fields. But it's very, very highly mineralised, very highly mineralised. So when you look at the stream, it actually looks blue. It's got that copper in it. And as I said before, to drink that water at a prolonged period, although it kind of all sounds good and pristine, is not great. It's not great for your hydration, and it's also not great. It can do things like send you blind if you drink that for too long.
Right, and it also interferes with the electrolysis in the cells as well, does it?
Yes, absolutely, the way hydrogen is donated in the cells. What we use there is a system of reverse osmosis to clean the water. And reverse osmosis, which isn't for everybody, is probably next to distillation the way of removing everything out of the water. It gets maybe 98, 99% of the heavy metals out of the water. The problem with reverse osmosis is that it's very wasteful on water. So for every litre of water you make, you would discard a litre and a half to 2 litres of water.
That's quite a lot. If you're under conditions where you're sometimes concerned about the amount of water in the tank, that's a definite consideration, I would have thought.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you're paying for water, you know, if you're in a city and you're paying for water, water's become quite expensive. Where, you know, in Melbourne, for example, where I'm quite near now, you don't want to be throwing out that much water. It's just kind of a bit indulgent. And but we're okay up in Queensland, as I've said, because we're pumping water. We're pumping it with a solar pump. You know, it's and the water that we're throwing out is just going back down into the river. Yeah. So
it's quite a substantial filtration system, isn't it? Reverse osmosis, isn't it? Quite expensive to run.
It's actually not so bad. When I looked at a few figures, in the UK you can buy a quite a good system for about £400. And then the filters for it will need changing every 6 months to a year, depending on how often, how many people are drawing from it. And you would cost, the filters would cost about £50. Mm-hmm. And then there's a membrane that you have to change every 2 years, which is another £50. So you might be spending, you know, the initial cost plus another £100 a year, which, you know, a jug would cost that much, just about, to run with filters.
Yeah.
One of the problems is space, though. It takes up a fair bit of space under your sink.
Yeah. Is it expensive to have it installed?
You can do it yourself quite easily. It's a do-it-yourself job if you're a bit handy. I guess it would be an hour for a plumber, an hour or two for a plumber.
Yeah. But there are other ways for people to filter their water when that's not suitable.
Yeah, well, look, our filtration system of preference when we're in the UK, we live in East Sussex, where the water is really groundwater, largely, is to distill it. We distill the water. And the good thing about distillation is it takes everything out except the water. You know, yeah. what you're left with is just water. There's no, but the bad thing about it is it's like a dead duck. You know, it's negative really. It's got like a blank slate. So you have to bring it up again.
Mm-hmm. And you do that by your stirring and motion and...
Yeah, and remineralising. You need to remineralise it because, you know, as I said before, you want about between TDI of between 50 and 100, whereas distilled water is just neutral. If you drink that for too long without remineralizing it will not do you any good. That electrolysis won't happen between the cells well, and it could even start sort of taking minerals out of your body a little bit. So it's not a good thing to drink distilled water for too long without doing something to it. And a distillation unit would cost you about £200. But, of course, the trouble with distillation is you have to think about how you're powering it. Where's your electricity coming from? Or, you know, or are you using – you can get stovetop ones as well, that you might be using gas to fire it.
Yes, I've been wondering about doing that myself because we don't have it. I know some friends of mine have got one that I think swallows – 400 watts or so up in North Wales, but I was wondering about the possibility of building one outside that you could run with an open fire or a rocket stove. There's no reason why you shouldn't do that, is there really?
Oh no, it's if you've, you know, got a little bit of you can buy ones that will run on the stove already. I think they run at about £500. It's a bit of a fiddle though. You when you're doing it for a lot of people in your house, it can be quite a lot of work. It becomes a dedication, you know, looking after your water, some mindfulness. And most people haven't got the time to be doing too much with their water, which would be the problem with the stovetop distillation. you can go to big systems like they use in dental practices and hospitals, which probably would run at a couple of thousand pounds. So they're actually plumbed in.
Yeah.
Giving you distilled water. Yeah.
I suppose, though, quite apart from the fact that you end up with good, pure water to start with, the actual act of having a regular part of the day when you're having to attend to such things is actually going to improve the water too.
Yes, that's right. It's a focus, and it kind of loves you up as you dance and sing to your water. It makes you feel good, makes the water feel good, and that spirals in an upward way. Just back on the distillation, I think our distiller runs about 750 watts, and that will produce about 3.5 litres in about 3 hours. So say a litre an hour at 750 watts.
That's quite swift, that is, isn't it? That's quicker than the one I've come across.
Yeah. And there are many, some better than others, but I don't think you need an expensive one to start. Again, it's some countertop space, and you don't want to run your distiller, under your food storage cupboard. It's steam in your kitchen.
Yeah.
So you want to be, and it's noise too. They're noisy.
I was really struck by the difference in, there was tap water that was being distilled in the place I was in, and I was really struck by the change in the taste. It was a complete transformation, really.
Oh, yeah. Once you get used to good, nice water, and then you go to, well, again, it depends where the tap water is. So here in Melbourne, the water is rainwater. It's not bore water. So it's TDI is already at about 50 to 100. It's actually really good quality water. However, they fluoridate it. And that's another whole thing. Fluoridation, nasty stuff. That's a big plot against humanity.
It is something that's covered on MSI. That is quite a lot. I know one of our hosts, Sean Maguire, he figures that because they've been fluoridated in Ireland for a lot longer than anywhere else, and much more thoroughly, it sounds to me, as well, because there's places in England that have it and places that don't. And it really makes a lot of difference to you, doesn't it?
Yes. It's just at a political, social sort of sense. It's, medicating people against their will. And the thing about fluoride, though, is it's really hard to get rid of from water. It's activated charcoal filters, and the only real way to get rid of it is reverse osmosis or distillation. I think there are some other filters, but they're very slow and very expensive. So if you're in a fluoridated area, I in the UK, I probably look at distillation.
Yeah. And then how would you set about remineralizing it?
Well, if you're if you're using a reverse osmosis system, you can put water, what they call water softeners or mineral, you can add minerals in line on your system automatically. One of the, I don't like to use those because you don't know where the minerals are coming from. A lot of them are coming out of China. And they could be, as toxic as what you've just tried to remove. So, I think that generally speaking, they're okay. But, I'm a little bit suspect. What I like to use is Himalayan crystal salt. It's a really nice salt. It's got lots of minerals in it. It's readily available, very clean. Himalayan crystal salt's kind of been mined from under a glacier where it's been, laid down millennia ago, and you can just, for probably about, say, 2 litres of water, a little pinch of crystal salt into the water, and then you do your vortexing, which if you're doing manually, so you just add the crystal salt, and while you're vortexing, you can say a little chant or a little sing, or admire your water a bit, schmooze it a bit. Or, there's other machines like the Vitalizer Plus, which come with a crystal basket that adds, as they're vortexing it, they add minerals back into it, and they're also magnetised. And that's a bit of kit that will cost you about £300.
Well, that sounds like it does the whole job in a wanna.
Yes, yes. So sometimes, you know, it depends what you're using your water for. If I'm making, say, a potion, as I've talked about, for healing waters on site, I want to do it myself, you know. I want to have some. But if I'm in a day-to-day rhythm, I need to know that the water's easy to do, so I'll have machines that do it for me. Yeah.
Have you heard of black mica?
Vaguely. Yeah.
Right, yeah, because there was just a question in the chat box asking whether you had any thoughts about it.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it. I take it it's that and things like prill beads that you can add to your water that will, I think they'll soften it, but they'll also draw out some of the contaminants. I like to know it's done. I'm always a little bit just personally suspect about those sort of systems that you leave in the water. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you don't know what's in the water, and you don't know what you're taking out, and you don't know how long they're sitting in there.
Yeah. Yeah. You said that you were, because, I mean, it's good to hear somebody talking confidently about distilled water and the remineralization of it, because I think it's a good way to go as well. Especially being as it seems to me that people's water supplies are degrading over time. You said that in Melbourne it's mostly rainwater that's being captured. Is that being captured by the system or by individuals?
No, by the system. The water is taken from rivers that in catchment areas or big dams in catchment areas, and then comes in big pipes and down the tap to us. In fact, in Melbourne, very naughtily, when they brought in the reticulated water system, which I can't tell you when, but early last century, they outlawed tanks. They outlawed people catching their own water. One of those horrible things that happened wouldn't allow people to actually do their own water. You had to be on the mains water supply.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've hit more droughts in the last 10, 15 years, they've done a backtrack on that one. And they're now encouraging people to put in water tanks, particularly for garden watering and so much. You know, we're kind of used to water restrictions in Melbourne and in Australia, just 3 years of drought and consciousness about not watering the garden and, you know, short showers and, you know, for example, one thing I notice in the UK is that the dual flush toilet's not everywhere, where it's been everywhere in Australia for quite some time. But you're throwing down litres and litres of water, treated water down the toilet every time you flush it, unnecessarily.
Yes. And, of course, irrespective of how much water you're flushing it away with, that's one of the things that struck me quite recently after reading the Human Ewer Handbook, is that that we're all of us regularly polluting our water through that particular system anyway.
Yes, yes. Well, just in terms of anything we ingest, about 90% of it's going down the toilet. So I suppose you're referring to things like estrogens and antidepressants and, you know, personal care products and all that sort of thing that are going down the toilet. Yeah. But even just in terms of flushing treated water, you know, that's been chlorinated and treated in high-value water and then throwing it down the toilet again. I mean, a lot of people, all you need to do is stick a brick in your system. You don't need as much water flushing as is happening.
Mm-hmm. And are people sort of going rogue and catching their own rainwater anyway, do you know, or does everybody kind of comply with this requirement that you're not allowed to catch something that's falling free from the sky?
Well, now they've loosened up on it, so people are catching their own rainwater, but then you don't necessarily want to drink the rainwater in a city, because the rainwater in a city has fallen through some pretty murky air, you know, to get to us. In fact, I believe that, you know, just about anywhere in the world where you measure what's going on with rainwater, it will show evidence of having dioxins in it and all sorts of nasty things. So you still, even if it's rainwater, you still want to look at doing some sort of filtering on it.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing that, because we were looking into the drinking of rainwater sort of a year or so ago. And like everything else on the internet, there's about as many people saying that you absolutely can drink it when it's filtered, and a lot of people saying that you absolutely can't drink it even when it's filtered.
I don't see, it depends where. So like I said, in Melbourne they've got fluoridation. If you catch the rainwater and filter it, it's going to be easier to filter, cheaper to filter than something that's been fluoridated. With fluoridation you have to use reverse osmosis or distillation. But if it's just looking at, you know, activated carbon will get out most of the dioxins and, inorganic compounds from rainwater. So, you know, and it hasn't got a whole city's worth of contraceptive pill in it.
Yeah.
And their shampoo and their all this. So, I mean, rainwater is basically distilled water. That's what it is. You know, it's naturally distilled water.
So it's another good starting material, really.
It's an excellent starting material, yes. And certainly, you know, giving it to your animals and things, even if you can't afford to filter all their water, is a better way to go.
Yeah. I've heard that, I've seen it myself. I've seen that if you put some spring water in front of a dog and some tap water, it seems automatically to know to go to the spring water.
Yeah, well, yeah, why wouldn't you? It's a lie. Yeah, yeah. Tap water's stagnant. You know, it's stagnant stuff, and it's kind of a... I guess it's a reflection of where we are. I mean, in general, it's a good thing that we've got so much clean water about, and I don't think, you know, we should talk down the efforts too much in what they've done, you know, to filter water and to reclaim it. You know, basically, I guess we've got the population has doubled in the last 40 years. But we've still got the same amount of drinking water on the planet. And some good efforts are being, you know, done to clean it. But a lot of these toxins are too expensive for, you know, municipal water treatment plants to remove. They just don't have, you know, they can't be reverse osmosising the water for everybody.
Mm.
And so that's why we have to think about it for ourselves.
Yeah. What about... But I mean, we use a carbon filter jug. Actually, since I came to your talk, I decided finally that it would be a good idea to have one. They basically seem to me to be pretty good. Although you're right, I was quite surprised by the cost. It is going to cost us, if we buy filters as often as is recommended, it's going to cost us about £120 a year to run it.
Yeah. I mean, activated carbon is excellent. It will remove most of everything from water. The problem with it, I mean, I think it's something like, let me think, a pound of activated carbon has a surface area of 125 acres, which is a figure that kind of blows me out. So, you know, it's why a little bit of carbon will filter so much water. But we don't necessarily know when it's done filtering it. Once those that surface area fills up with toxins, it's not doing any good. So people will tend to buy those jugs, put their carbon filter in it, and 6 months later they're still on the same filter.
Mm.
And you know, you're just kidding yourself, really. It's not doing anything at all.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask you, actually, because the filters we get seem to be pretty arbitrary. They basically assume that you're going to use it 100 times in a month or something and tell you that that's the that it needs to be changed. And, of course, one can't help sort of slightly distrusting information that's coming from the producer. I was wondering if there's any way of testing the efficacy of these things. Are there any sort of reasonably priced things that you can use to test the water?
Not that I know of. They won't change the TDI of water to start. So in the UK, in East Sussex, what comes out of our taps about 220 TDI, total dissolved solids, and that's too high. So putting it through carbon won't change that terribly. It will taste a bit ranker. The other thing is, you know, it will filter some of the metals out, but it will prefer to filter out lead. So if your water's got a lot of lead in it, lead pipes, that will come out first, and then the other metals will just go through. So it's not as effective. But, yeah, taste is some indication, but not total. Yeah,
right, that's interesting. I didn't know they didn't reduce the TDI of the water.
No, they don't seem to. Maybe a bit, but not enough. Not enough.
And
but it's a good standby. Look, if you're travelling, or you know, sometimes you can't filter enough of your water, and certainly if you're catching rainwater, you know, to put it through a carbon filter's great. And you can make carbon filters too.
How do you go about that?
Well, it's basically you can make a very nice filter by getting something like a drum or some kind of an urn. Make sure the plastic that it's made of is, you know, is okay, good for drinking out of, and putting some bungs in the bottom. So even something like they use for distilling beer in those home brew kits, something like that. And you layer sand and carbon, charcoal, and pebbles and sand and, you know, more charcoal, and push some water through that and then into another storage vessel. And remember to you know, clean it out every probably couple of months, depending on how big it is and how much water you're putting through it. And you can reboil the charcoal also. You can clean it up again a few more times, take it out, clean it, wash it, boil it, and put it back in again, and it'll be ready to go for a little bit longer.
So that's something you can't really do with the proprietary filters, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you can't do that. You can't recharge them. No, they're a closed unit. Yeah.
So are you left with... you're basically left with reverse osmosis and distillation then if you want to reduce the TDI of the water you're drinking?
Yes, you can. There are probably more expensive ways of some ceramic filters. There are we're not talking about the jug, off-the-shelf jug filters here, but there are some more under-sink kind of units that will do the job, that will reduce heavy metals, certainly that you can buy online in the UK quite easily and reasonably cheaply. By the time you're doing that, though, you want to probably look at reverse osmosis if you're not paying too much for your water. Reverse osmosis, as well as having the filters, and a typical system is a four-stage filter, has a tank which holds about, it's about a 10-litre tank that you need to find space for.
Mm-hmm.
And it pushes, it works by pushing water through a membrane after it's cleaned most of the toxins out. So, yeah, that's the problem with that. So other filters, as I say, that are reducing heavy metal, you might as well look at distillation, especially if you're sourcing your electricity from a renewable source.
Yeah. Yeah, if you have your own electricity, that would be really great, wouldn't it? You need quite a lot of it, though.
Yes, or buying, you know, you can buy clean electricity too.
Yeah.
To pull it up, you can put your dollars or your pound somewhere that, is in the right direction.
Yeah. You mentioned ceramic filters there. I remember seeing one when I was up in Nottingham doing a talk that looked to be a ceramic vessel on a worktop. I think it was Italian. How do they work?
They're much the same. They're a top reservoir with a filter called a ceramic candle that sits there, and inside that ceramic candle are layers of charcoal and various bits and pieces, and there's different grades in those ceramic filters that you can buy. And they usually hold about 8 litres that will slowly kind of percolate through to a bottom reservoir where you can take your water. But the thing to be mindful is you'll have stagnant water. You still need to vitalize it. You still need to structure it after you've put it through the...
Yeah, it sounds like doing the structuring stuff's a good idea, almost whatever water you're ending up with.
Sorry, you broke up then.
It sounds like doing the restructuring is a good thing to do to almost any of the water that you're going to drink. Have I lost you?
Hello, no, you're back again, I think. Oh.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, we thought we might have a little bit of problem with the Skype contact. Let me know if it's iffy. I can play a song and get back to you.
I think we're okay now. Yeah. Yes, look, the ceramic, if you want to prolong your life of your carbon filters or your ceramic candles, and you say you're going away on holiday and you think it's still got a little bit of mileage left in it, pop it in the freezer. Take it out of the jug and put it in the freezer. And when you come back, you can thaw it out and use it again, and it just halts any bacterial growth that might be going on in there.
Right. Yeah. Indeed. Do you presumably it's only your drinking water you filter, is it, or have you come across whole house filters?
Oh no, whole house. Well, again, depends where you are. Yes, a whole house filter to get the chlorine out, particularly. A lot of people can have skin issues with chlorine. It's good to maybe put a filter on your shower. Whole house filtering, you know, reverse osmosis isn't, or distillation isn't for your whole house. It's too expensive. So that's really your drinking water, which I think is the first thing to pay attention to, personally. But if you've got the wherewithal to filter your entire house, it's a good idea, yeah.
Yeah, because I gather we can absorb something like a litre and a half a day through our skin, quite apart from what we drink.
Yeah, I don't know that it's quite that high, but yes, we do absorb a fair bit through our skin. I don't think it's quite a litre and a half, but we take in some that way, some through our lungs.
Yeah. I think chlorine's one of the important ones for me because in North Wales we actually had a guy come round to test the water, which before he came tasted really fine and was, you know, okay. But shortly after he'd gone away again, they were doing local checks on the place. It got to the point where when you turned the kitchen tap on, you could actually smell the chlorine. And I've been in places in Oxfordshire where you really can't make a cup of tea out of the water because of the amount of chlorine in it.
Yeah, it stinks. It's a gas. Chlorine's a gas, which the good news is if you're using it and you can let it sit a bit open, you'll discharge some of it anyway, naturally. So it's worse if it's just been – if the local treatment plant's just shoved a whole lot down the waterworks, and then later in the day it'll be a bit better. It's been a boon for treatment plants in terms of removing bacteria from the water. It's been excellent, but yes, you don't want to drink it. And even for watering your plants, if you can, and you're reliant on tap water, if you can take out a few watering cans of water and let that sit for half a day, you'll get rid of a lot of the chlorine.
Yes.
The chlorine's not too hard to remove, yeah. Actually.
No, I have noticed that. And does any of that get removed by your carbon filters?
Yes, largely. That's can be removed.
Yeah. Very good stuff. So what else do you think we should know about water?
Goodness. I think you the first thing to do is just start and really think about where your water's coming from. Do the research, ring up your water company. And see where it's coming from. Have a think about the water in your house. Have a think about your gutters, where they're discharging, how the water is, the drainage is working in your property. Water is, there's a Chinese thought that, we want to emulate water because it's very humble. It always seeks the lowest point. And, this is a nice attitude to take. But it can also stagnate. So just, think about water under your house, water in your roof, what it's doing to you. It's to sit and live on water that is carrying energy information, it's not good for your health at all, and we see this a lot. It can, you know, exacerbate your immune system, can lead to cancer. And you can get kind of information fields in water, in streets or different areas that, you know, perhaps carries, I don't know, it's like you'll get a rash of divorces in a street. And it's like the water's carrying this information field under all the houses. Or you'll get a rash of cancer, you know, one side of the street, and they'll all get some various form of cancer. Now, I wouldn't say the water's causing this, but it's exacerbating the energy, you know, the field of energy is not good. So certainly if you can do it yourself, or if you can afford to get a geomancer to come and have a look at your underground water, and it's going to be more salient where you're sleeping, where you're spending a lot of the time of the day, if that you've got water that's unhealthy flowing under your bed. So there's that level of it, you know, your environmental water, if you like. Mm. And then to kind of come in and look at your physical water, what you're drinking, what you're showering in, you know. And if you can clean that up, get the, you know, all the the personal care products and things that we're using, the drugs that are going down the drain, you know, be conscious of your part in that. What you're putting down the toilet, what you're ingesting, what you're putting, you know, back into planetary consciousness. It's very important.
Yeah, the personal care products are something that are worth considering, aren't they? Because it's all very well making sure all your water's good and clean, but it seems to me a lot of those really aren't.
No, and look, more's coming. I don't think it's recent. It's just that we're knowing more. The science has improved, and it's a bit scary, really, that we're finding these parabens and different chemicals, you know, turning up in strange places, and, you know, we're starting to having effects, feminizing fish, and, you know, and perhaps even some could say feminizing the male population in some areas. And it's, yeah, what are we eating is all coming out somewhere. What are we putting on our hair? You know, these beauty products, and they've shown that females are showing up with more of these chemicals in their system, because of course they're using probably more of these products.
Mm.
And then that's in turn going down the drains, and that won't be removed by the municipal water systems.
No, so it's getting kind of built up over time.
Yeah, built up both, you know, vibrationally and, you know, if you think of, people showering and what's going through their head while they're showering, and then that vibration as well as the chemicals going down the drain and in some places to be treated and put back into the system again.
It's amazing to think that, isn't it, that people's emotional, quite apart from the fluoride and all the other things that are being done to the water, that people's emotional states get carried on with it as well.
Yeah, in a very jumbled, incoherent sort of way. And I guess if you start to tune into that, it can be a little bit torturous, and I don't think it's a good place to live, really. So if you can have your shower and use nice products and sing and chant and om and, you know, and in the shower, you're studying your day in a nice way, but you're also putting it back into the water system.
Yeah, we were hearing earlier in the little film clip that I played that the love actually increases the energy of the water and stabilizes it, whereas hate reduces energy in it and makes it incoherent.
Yes, it's not like I was saying before about the crystal, you know, the difference between a clear quartz crystal, you know, and some rock quartz. It's the rock quartz, it's like unstructured water. It's not, it still has energy, you know, it'll still, if you're thirsty, it'll still keep you alive. But it's not a coherent message. Once you clean up your water and structure it, it has a, it's, you know, like a fine voice. It will carry that message cleanly. And the higher vibration water, and the higher vibration you are, and the higher vibration your community is, and the earth becomes, it, you know, the only place is up, really, with the vibration, even though the water seeks to be humble.
It's great that, really, because we seek to encourage people to be always peaceful in their approach to the outside world, and it seems that that could well have effects sort of way beyond just the words you're speaking and things. It could be making, as you said, helping the community that you live in.
Yeah, yeah, and if you look at, think about your house, you know, if you come home and you start despairing about this and that, and it's, you know, all the bills and all the, you know, it becomes stagnant and pooled. And I believe because we are so watery, because our planet is so watery, you know, we're the big blue planet after all, it's an easy, it's a turgid place to go, and it just goes, you know, in, to nowhere. It's not useful. Whereas if you can come home and start to look at the more lovely aspects, well, you know, maybe I can't buy the best filtration unit, but, you know, hey, I've got a nice carbon filter, and, you know, I'm catching some nice rainwater here, and, you know, the sky's blue and it's all lovely. It starts to pick up, and then you will start to vibrationally look for better solutions and have better solutions available to you.
Yes, because by looking for them and having the intent to do that, I guess you're going to attract them to you, aren't you? Things, thoughts, ideas become things over time.
Yeah, and that's why I like the idea of water consciousness, where we're both conscious of our water and we can appreciate that it does hold consciousness. No.
Yeah.
So it's going to be largely where you're at, what you perceive too.
Yeah. So again, your attitude perhaps is almost as important as the raw material you're starting with. It's got to be worth thinking of once again. I find myself thinking that here's another good reason for spending a bit of time at the beginning and the end of the day doing some meditation or some calming exercise of some sort.
Yeah, and if you've, you know, if you can do a bit with your water, kind of it's a nice practical place to do it, because it serves you in terms of, you know, just cleaning up your water for the day. But it's a nice devotional exercise to purify your water, put it into a nice vessel, and vortex it, and, you know, do a little bit of schmoozing. It focuses you, and gratitude. You know, you start to give gratitude into the water, and then when you, every glass you're drinking, or your family or your friends is drinking, is singing back to you.
Yeah,
nice
brilliant.
Stuff.
Yeah, brilliant. So if we do call in a geomancer to come and help us sort some of the sort of the macro stuff out, what kind of thing can we expect? What would happen?
Okay, well, geomancers work differently. There's, you know, as many different geomancers techniques as there are coloured cats, probably, all cats but different colours. So, largely speaking, you would expect them to start tuning into the energies. Now, some of them like to work very much on the elemental level, which we kind of touched on before. So, it can be quite nice to check on the elemental health of the property, and they will tune you into what's going on. Whereas others like to work with the water dragons. So they will tune into the underground energies, the underground water that's flowing through the property, and clean up those energy fields, you know, where there's a blockage of water, using various methods. Earth acupuncture is a popular one. So you're actually discerning different nodal points in the environment, usually by dowsing, where you can access these streams. And where these streams cross, the energy is often more potent and can be more dangerous, particularly if a crossing is under your bed. So often a geomancer is led by the symptoms that the occupants are reporting. And then it may take a couple of hours, it may take a couple of visits, a geomancer should be competent to clean up those energy fields. Then there's also the kind of level of looking at the form, which a lot of this information comes from the Chinese practices of feng shui. It's been a little bit lost in Western geomancy. But we can look at the way the property flows, the way the energy flows. So we're not looking at, we're looking at the way the water flows, but also the chi, the vital energy. And if a property has good support and a good ability to both receive chi and let it go, so it's flowing chi, it will be healthier. So you would expect initially health to pick up, but it can also be related to things like bad neighbor syndrome, you know, where you've got this consternated water flowing under both properties and neighbors are just not getting, you know, they're throwing grass clippings over each other's fences and you know, hate mail and, you know, this sort of thing. You can start to clean up that energy field and those sort of things will just resolve themselves. Maybe the neighbors will move because the energy becomes vibrationally not akin to them. They don't like it anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Or it just gets resolved, you know, for whatever reason. So, yeah, a lot of things can improve and also can have some effect on your finances. You know, as you start to clean up your act in a health sense or your environment in a health sense, you're expending a lot less energy on just kind of staying afloat, just, you know, keeping walking day to day. You're not having to worry about your health. And then once you've got your energy freer, you're able to take advantage of any opportunities that come your way. You know, a little bit of good luck, you're not so worried looking behind you, and you can seize that luck, and then your wealth and your finances can improve as well.
I think that's certainly a very good point, because I've been sort of relaxing more as I've moved further away from industry, and one of the things I've noticed, and living out in the countryside as well actually made a lot of difference, but one of the things I noticed is that I was able to pick up on kind of opportunities that were coming by that would have otherwise passed me by. And just like synchronistic, it's like they come up at the right time to draw my attention to them.
Yeah. I think a lot of, shall we say, magic works that way. It's you know, you just become into a higher vibration and the synchronicity is right. And you know, if you're walking around with heavy bags and you're feeling stagnant and your blood's stagnant and you're full of toxins, you really don't have the space or the ability to fly high. You know, it's hard.
How much water do you drink during a day, and when do you do it?
I think generally we need about 2.5 litres a day. It will vary on how old you are and how active you are and, you know, what you're doing with yourself. We urinate out about 1.5 litres and then, you know, we breathe out and, you know, we poo out. And, you know, women also have a menstrual flow. So it will depend a little bit. But we want 2.5, say a good 1.5 to 2 litres of clean water. Now, that's not, you know, coffee and tea and that sort of water that's already engaged, as they say, engaged water. You want that in addition. So every time you have a cup of tea or coffee, you should really have some water to go with it.
Yeah. I'm told that water should be drunk a good distance either side of meals rather than during it as well. Do you have any thoughts on that?
There is some controversy about that one. The American fashion, for example, is to drink water with meals. So they like to, but the idea is that it will dilute your digestive juices and slow down your digestion. I think it's good to have a glass of water about a half an hour before, and then you need to have about a glass of water about a half an hour after. And that's to help the production of bile and the digestions, the processes of the gallbladder and the liver.
Mm-hmm. And is it good to have water first thing in the morning when you wake up?
Absolutely. It's the first thing you should have is some water, and not hot, not cold water. I don't think it serves your body to have very cold water. If you can have some room temperature water as your first thing. If you want, you can have a little squeeze of lemon juice in it. It's just good to activate the liver. But yes, first thing on rising, water.
And the water's still water, is it, if you put something like lemon juice in it, from a lemon, that is, rather than from a bottle?
You've started to put other things in it, mineral, but it will serve you okay. I mean, I wouldn't – it depends who you are and what's going on. Particularly if you've got congested liver, I'd go for a bit of lemon juice because the bitter will start your liver activated. So, you know, people who are perhaps imbibing in a lot of alcohol or drugs or things you know, it'd be better to give up the drugs and the alcohol, but they want to kickstart their liver, a little bit of lemon juice won't hurt. Yeah.
I think I read that that all the juice that's in fruit is in fact distilled water too.
It is, but it's going into your body. It's engaged, as they say. So it's not as useful for deoxidizing and getting rid of the free radicals in your body as unengaged water.
Mm-hmm.
There's really no substitute for water, you know. You can't substitute it with fruit juices or fruits. But yes, fruit's nice clean water. But you need this free water to perform the new functions in the body. If some people, I mean, I've come across some clients, and I remember having speaking to a client at one of the festivals, and she'd never drunk water ever in her life, so her whole fluid intake was, you know, from Coca-Cola.
I remember being really angry when I discovered, because I used to drink Coca-Cola, but I did discover eventually that it actually consumes more liquid, more water, more of your hydration than you can get from it.
Yes. I mean, you're just taking a cocktail of you know, very acidic, sugary, you know, yuck. And you know, this girl was probably in her early 20s, and you know, if you know, coming to see me and trying to improve your life, the best thing she can do is just start drinking water. It's easy. You know, her life would improve majestically if she drank half the Coca-Cola and, you know, twice the water.
Isn't it amazing that people can survive and be drinking only Coca-Cola? I've met people who don't drink water too.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, actually. It's a testament to what resilient things we are.
Yeah, yeah. Harder to kill than roaches.
Yeah, but we're talking about quality of life, of course, you know. So, yes, you can survive on Coca-Cola, the water from Coca-Cola, but it's not a good quality of life. You know, those sort of carbonated drinks, they bond the hydrogen in the water, and so they reduce the oxygen. So, you know, just slowly less oxygenated. And, you know, if you couple that with cigarettes and living in a toxic environment, maybe in toxic relationships, it's sad.
Yeah.
It's very sad.
Yeah. So carry on.
I think if we can clean up the water, you know, for the greater population, you know, we're starting to look at ways of perhaps doing that with, you know, using microbes to break up sewage and new strains of seeds and, you know, general forms of osmosis systems for desalination. If we can start to clean up the general population's water, we'll start to see a raise in consciousness.
Yeah, we certainly would if we took the fluoride out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There's a question in the chat box that's come up saying, is there a plant that can clean water?
I can't give you the names of them. There's the sedge plants and things they use in the waterbeds, reed beds, that they're using a lot. I've seen them using them around places like refuge tips and things, where for years, of course, they've been dumping toxic rubbish, and it's been found that these are now made their way into the water system. So they're now planting all sorts of plants. I'm sorry, I can't give you the names of them.
No, but they are. I agree. They are there. I know that they use them. It's they can be used in some sorts of toilet systems. Well, I think there's a filter first. More or less like what you described earlier, a kind of gravel trap filter. And then the water runs through a reed bed, I think it is.
And sedges and reed beds.
Yeah. And I know that in Cornwall, where they had a lot of metal mining and stuff, they're having a lot of success using techniques like that to clean up even all of the wastewater that's pouring out of a flooded mine, which is really impressive.
It is impressive, but the travesty is that, you know, we've got, on one hand, we're being, you know, we're paying money to clean up water, and on the other hand, we've got, you know, companies, big pharma, you know, promoting practices and consumerism. You know, we kind of tacitly agreed to this consumeristic world we live in, that's polluting our water. So we can't both be polluting it and cleaning it up.
Doesn't make any sense, does it?
We're kind of being charged twice, you know.
Yes.
Being charged for the products, and then we're being charged to clean it up. You know?
Might not be good for us, it might not be good for the planet, but it's definitely good for business.
It is good for business. It's great. You know, let's sell more plants and desalination equipment and all sorts of things. You know, so if we can start by using less water, and that's why I say a brick in the toilet, you know, if you have a look at what you're flushing down the drain, you know, be conscious at that level. Use less water, use less products down the water, you know. The days have gone of going, you know, camping in Australia to a nice stream and washing your hair with lovely shampoo all down the stream, killing the platypuses.
Yeah, you're better off probably. I mean, there's not really any need to use the shampoo when you're washing your hair, is there?
No. I mean, there are certain products you can use that are better than others. And, you just have to be a bit conscious.
Yeah.
And we're using too much of it. We're doing too much of it. Too much washing.
Well, I think that's covered the subject really nicely. Thank you very much, Julie.
Yeah, well, as I say, thank you for, you know, talking about it. I think it's important and easy to improve, easy to do better. Just do better than you're doing and you're on the right track.
Yeah, and better for you, better for your neighbours, better for the water. And it introduces a bit of focus into modern life, because I have a suspicion that the it might not be just the water that's sensitive to the to things like love and gratitude and all the rest of it. It might just be our whole environment that responds to it.
Well, I know we are. I'm very sensitive to it. I like a bit of love and gratitude. So it follows, doesn't it?
Certainly does. Doing to others as you would have done unto you.
Excellent thing to live by. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just remember that, you know, someone always lives downstream of you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. An important thought. Well, thanks a lot, Julie. I'll just put a tune on and I can have a chat with you whilst that's playing, and I will be back with you people shortly. You are, of course, listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on msiradio.com, and you've been listening to Julie Rocker.